You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Acknowledge and pay our respects to the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians whose ancestral lands we gather on. We acknowledge the deep feelings of attachment and relationship of the Kaurna people to country, and we respect and value their past, present, and ongoing connection to the land and cultural beliefs. It's a blessing you were born. It matters what you do with your life. What you know about God is a piece of the truth. You do not have to do it alone. Those were the words of Leila Ibrahim. Welcome to our service of worship. I'm Jenny Deister, and I'm currently lay leader of this spiritual community, but not for much longer. We had a lovely meeting yesterday with our new minister, Chris Hanna. It was very, very promising. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. Unitarians are neither a chosen people nor a people whose choices are made for them by theological authorities, ancient or otherwise. We are a people who choose. We choose to be inclusive and welcome diversity. You are welcome no matter what your faith background is or beliefs, your ethnic ancestry, gender or gender preference. You may have your ideas challenged, but not your identity or authenticity. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love and to help one another. After the service, you're welcome to stay for tea, coffee and conversation. Our first hymn is hymn 18, and it's in the Green Hymnal. Possibly go wrong. Nothing. Go ahead. Do it. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Thus speaks the optimist. The pessimist knows there's a train wreck ahead. What could possibly go wrong will go wrong. Our friends employ the question as an opener to the story of their last misadventure. Or maybe their spouse's last misadventure, or a friend, or one of their kids. Their lack of judgment or foresight, I should have seen that one coming. But what if you turn it around? What if you ask, what could possibly go right? Now, our optimist on the left might come up with some answers, but it's hard to imagine our pessimist on the right having the energy even to give you a massive eye roll. Now, as these gentlemen are both in an 1893 painting by Vladimir Makovsky, my surmises will never be confirmed or denied. If you type what could possibly go right into Google, you only get one known usage, and that's as the title of a series of podcasts from the Post-Carbon Institute with the theme of resilience. Carbon. That sounds a bell in my memory. Look at your notices. Advertised is a film entitled Carbon, the Unauthorized Biography. It's not yet another dry, disheartening scare piece about climate change. The film steers clear of doom and gloom and instead provides an unbiased history documenting both the good and the bad that carbon has played a part in, while simultaneously ensuring that we're left with a feeling of connectedness and some hope for the future. Carbon takes on the role of protagonist, presented not only with a voice, but also a gender. Sarah Snook, Australian actor, plays the part. A host of celebrated scientists and academics come together to speak on the history of the most promiscuous atom, making carbon sound more like Regina George of her high school than a chemical element essential for all life on Earth. But fear not, it is suitable for children. It's quirky, imaginative, and the reviews were interesting. Paul Byrne of the Sydney Morning Herald was uneasy, though, despite his appreciation of the film. This is what he wrote. "I didn't disagree with anything I heard here, but the manner of the message is problematic. By anthropomorphizing carbon, the narration suggests a direct consciousness. We used to call that God, until Darwin gave us a different way of interpreting the natural world. Scientist James Lovelock suggested in the 1970s that Gaia is a thing, that the world is a self-correcting organism and we are the thing that needs correcting. The film never mentions Gaia, but by personalising carbon, giving her a voice, they don't need to. She's there in every sentence. Now, some will not object to this approach. The two directors, Daniela Ortega in Australia and Niobe Thompson in Canada, have assembled some great explainers. Who cares if they've all been asked to call carbon she and speak as if carbon had a conscious purpose? Call me old-fashioned, I do. It took thousands of years of scientific work to free us from the idea that a greater consciousness was directing nature. Resurrecting that idea, even as a metaphor, is counterproductive if you want people to take responsibility for the world." Well, what a stick in the mud. A Puritan atheist, methinks. It's interesting that the scientists who took part in the film had no such qualms. And these are my first answers to what could possibly go right. People are moving away from the false dichotomy that the choice is between God and Darwin, between science and religion. We are poetic seekers as well as logical analysts when it comes to the human condition. When you come to a Sunday service here at Norwood, you do not need to disengage your brain or your heart or your soul. We promote activities that celebrate many of our attributes and interests. Gardening on Saturday morning, meditative readings at Lectio and Moving Meditation, craft at Ruggers. We occasionally have a concert, a picnic, or a walk, or a film. And I hope many of you can come to see Carbon the Unauthorized Biography on Saturday, 1st of October. Light lunch provided, courtesy of the Stream of Life. Vegan and gluten-free people will be well catered for. Any donations will go to upgrading our membership of the Australian Religious Response to Climate Change. There's no charge for film or the food. What else could possibly go right? In the spirit of the story for all ages, we can look at things that are sad or bad. We don't have to start straining to always look on the bright side of life. The Queen's death, for example. It was, as I've already noted, a good one. But that's not the end of it. Funerals bring people together. And the Queen was generally a unifying figure as she supported countries freeing themselves from the trappings of colonialism. We will not see her like again. But that's not a tragedy. Other royal families of Europe have adapted, modernised and attempted to stay relevant, some more successfully than others. England has not downsized. The exposure to media and the expectations of others has been horrific at times. Now the Queen has gone, the woman who was described by the New York Times as the embodiment of the myth of the monarch, it may be possible for the British to reassess and downsize, change the role of the monarchy, be a smaller target for the media, and enable a more modest and balanced lifestyle for the King and his relations. It's difficult to imagine the UK becoming a republic, but you never know what might happen in New Zealand or Australia. We may follow in the steps of Barbados, which on the 30th of November 2021 transitioned from a parliamentary constitutional monarchy under the hereditary monarch Queen Elizabeth II to a parliamentary republic with a ceremonial indirectly elected president as head of state. Now, of course, good outcomes are in the eye of the beholder. Think about marriage equality. The Anglican Diocese of Sydney, along with some other religious groups, are still reeling from the shock, while most Australians are pleased it went through. And we have yet to find out how Australians feel about becoming a republic anyway. Change can be scary, even when people want it. Consider, for example, Chile. After violent rallies in 2019, when dozens of people were killed, an agreement emerged between legislators and protesters to draft a new constitution, one that would replace the existing charter, which was adopted under the military rule of Auguste Pinochet. In October 2020, Chileans voted overwhelmingly in a referendum for a new charter. 80% of the population was in favour. An elected body, 154 people, half men, half women, 17 Indigenous representatives, drafted the new charter. It was sent for approval to President Boric in July, giving citizens 2 months to debate the proposal before voting day on Sunday. It was last Sunday. The new constitution had a greater focus on social rights, the environment, and gender equality. And Gabriel Boric backed it. But Chile voted resoundingly to reject this proposed new constitution that could have ushered in a new progressive era in a result that far exceeded the expectations of the conservative opposition. Why? The most convincing explanation I heard is that people were afraid. They had lived through the dictatorship and seen people murdered, experienced torture and the disappearance of friends and workmates. They now have jobs, food, and a life, and are not willing to risk change in case they lose anything they had gained. In other words, they ask themselves what could go wrong, not what could go right. Now, it's not that one question is negative and will return a negative, and only optimists can produce positives. We need both. Maybe if the drafters of the Constitution had asked themselves what could possibly go wrong, as well as what could we possibly set right, they may have been in a better position to allay the misgivings of voters. A country that has successfully asked and acted upon the principle, what could possibly go right, is Wales. Jane Davidson was the Minister for the Environment, Sustainability and Housing. She proposed what became the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act of 2015. This was the first piece of legislation in history to place regenerative and sustainable practices at the heart of government. It didn't come out of the blue. The definition of sustainable development came from a commission in 1987. Sustainable development is development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. In 2007, the WWF produced a document called One Planet Wales, which inspired Jane. Now, in 2014, 193 countries signed up to a set of sustainable development goals in the UN. Now, Wales is not a member state of the UN, and none of the UN countries have managed to put these goals into law effectively. Why has Wales been so successful? Well, apart from recognising the importance of social, environmental and economic pillars undermining decision-making, they added one more, cultural. Creativity and imagination comes from culture, and you don't get behavioural change unless you understand the culture in which you're operating. Identity comes from culture. The key part of the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act is to set 7 goals in law. I won't go through the 7 goals, it's all right. But here's one, a prosperous Wales. This is defined in law as an innovative, productive, low-carbon society which recognises the limit of a global environment and uses resources efficiently and proportionately, including acting on climate change. Skills and education is another goal. So the government is talking about secure, decent work, generating wealth. This is not a lowest common denominator approach. Sticking with a mathematical metaphor, you could call it the highest common factor approach. The generation of politicians who created this legislation are mindful of the history of Wales. It was at the heart of the Industrial Revolution and was therefore a very dirty country with people living lives in the pit, on the quarry face, working with iron and steel. They were living appalling lives, making people rich, not Welsh people. The first £1 million cheque ever signed was in the coal exchange in Wales. But that money was leaving Wales. Wales became famous for exporting wealth and, wait for it, teachers to the USA, to India, to Sri Lanka. My friend Hilary Pereira Weasinja, it's a name that's English, Portuguese and Sinhalese, Hilary Pereira Weasinja, remembers being scolded by other teachers at St. Thomas's School in Colombo for speaking English in a lilting cadence. He found his Welsh teacher easier on the ears and easier to follow. Now, Jane Davidson's mantra of resilience is, however dark the day, there's always a dawn. She says, we know that 80% of British young people know about the threats of climate change, and the Americans and Australians have experienced awful fires and floods. We see on TV what is happening to the ice in the Arctic and the Antarctic. A great big pause and think button has been pressed around the world. COVID locked us down and gave us time to think. In the absence of parties and concerts and cinema, people began to walk more. Britain is not the only country in the world that has returned to loving nature through COVID. We have to look after our natural environment. If we don't, we won't survive. But that's fear motivation. What is heartening is the love motivation. The love affair that you see people of all ages having with the outdoors, with animals. Vegans are multiplying. Gardening is enjoying a resurgence. Jane's advice is carpe diem. Seize these moments, these trends. Look for the new dawn and promote the idea that good decision making must factor in more than one generation. Live simply, be of service, be guided by your faith and not your fear. Go lightly on your way.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.